Welcome to the April 2026 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear member and fellow marine professionals, it troubles me once again that I feel the need to start this month's column by raising the topic of lithium-ion battery fires, especially as the story I want to share with you is a land-based one that happened recently and not a maritime disaster. You may know of my keen interest in this technology and the challenges surrounding it. The incident I want to speak about and share with you is a massive fire in the Scottish city of Glasgow. A major fire broke out in a vape shop adjacent to the city's main railway station. Over the coming hours, the fire devastated an iconic 130-year-old Victorian building, leading to its eventual collapse, so intense was the conflagration. The images are truly shocking and resemble something one might expect to see in a war zone. As the fire started, a passerby Good Samaritan used his own initiative and tried to tackle the flames. He said to the press, "I ran into the shop, and I saw a small fire under the counter. There was an adapter charging system, full of chargers, and that's where the fire was." The man rushed next door to the neighboring shop to get help. He came back with a fire extinguisher, entered the burning store and tried to fight the fire. But two explosions inside the vape shop meant he had to turn around, exit and shout at passers-by to get back. Whilst the man's intentions were remarkable and heroic, it should have been an immediate red flag. My advice to anyone faced with a similar situation would be never try and tackle a lithium-ion battery fire with a portable fire extinguisher, just move away to safety and call the emergency services. And here's my real issue. Many people remain unaware of the potential dangers that lithium-ion-powered devices present. Yes, we all have them, lots of them, and the majority are safe, but when one blows, it causes mayhem. Therefore, being aware of the risks is vitally important. The maritime sector has seen its fair share of significant fires in recent months, with yachts being destroyed, more likely than not caused by lithium-ion-powered devices, not yet substantiated or proven in some cases. That's the suspicion at least, and in some cases, we just simply will never know because the destruction is total. Following the start of a thermal runaway event, if it results in an ensuing fire, it is the speed with which the flames spread, the intensity and the heat that are the concerns. And it is now well documented that the toxic gases released once thermal runaway activity starts, if inhaled, could be fatal. Fortunately, there were no casualties in the Glasgow accident. Compare that to the situation if a lithium-ion battery fire took hold on board a vessel at sea. The chances of survival could be minimal, depending on how fast a life raft or life-saving device could be deployed. I don't choose to write about this topic to deliberately shock anyone, but the reality is we must all obtain a better understanding of this technology, understand the basics of what can happen and ensure we have mitigation strategies in place should the worst happen. So, I will do all I can within my power to help people gain knowledge. It almost feels like my colleagues and I are engaging in a public service duty to the maritime industry, which, I might add, we are happy to do. Recently, I was contacted by the media group that publishes Maritime Journal and organizes the SeaWork show with an invitation to write an article. The result was toys and lithium-ion-powered devices can cause devastating marine fires, which coincidentally was published on the very same day as the Glasgow catastrophe. You can find this feature via the Maritime Journal website. In other news, IIMS is delighted to announce three essential training events taking place in the coming months. You can find more detailed information about all of them in this news bulletin, but in brief they are Western Mediterranean Yacht and Small Craft Working Group, Palma Mallorca, on the 30th of April and the 1st of May being held around the Palma International Boat Show. The next is our Practical Tonnage Measurement Training on the 19th of May, held at Itchener Sailing Club on the UK South Coast. And finally, Rigs, Mast and Sails, What Surveyors Need to Know is scheduled for the 23rd of June. The morning session will give in-person attendees a rare opportunity to see inside the Selden Mast production facility at Gosport. And finally, this is a reminder to anyone involved in UK-based workboat sector who needs to become compliant with the Workboat Edition 3 code by early December 2026. So concerned it seems is the MCA about the number of vessel owners and operators who have yet to bring their vessel, or vessels, into compliance that they have issued a warning to the sector. You can read this press release in the bulletin. But certifying authorities are concerned about their capacity to process a flood of surveys, examinations in time to ensure vessels are not laid up, given there is no grace period beyond the 13th of December 2026. So act now is the advice. Survey well, Mike. For our first report, IIMS celebrates 35 years since its foundation. Happy birthday to us. Yes, this month the Institute celebrates 35 years since its foundation in 1991. As part of our celebrations, and as a bit of fun, we have mined our extensive photograph collection and have posted upwards of 400 images taken at various IIMS events and training sessions to showcase our work over the past years. Many of these images have never seen the light of day before. Perhaps you will see photos of people you know, or you might even find yourself featuring in one of the galleries. You can view the photograph galleries on our website. In our next story, German researchers have launched a new project aimed at reducing underwater noise generated by ship propellers, a long-standing issue that affects marine life. The initiative, known as MinCAV, began on the 1st of January 2026 and is funded by the state of Schleswig-Holstein with a €390,000 grant. The project is being led by the Institute for Shipbuilding and Maritime Technology at HAW Kiel. The research team intends to develop new propeller designs that lower underwater noise levels without reducing vessel efficiency or speed. The project aims to keep operations running efficiently while reducing environmental impact. The program will continue until the 31st of December 2028. Next, the Memorandum of Understanding on Port State Control in the Black Sea region has released the preliminary results of a concentrated inspection campaign which focused on ballast water management. The campaign, carried out from the 1st of September to the 30th of November 2025, involved the member authorities of the Black Sea MOU that have ratified the BWM Convention. This CIC was conducted under the campaign coordination of the Maritime Administration of Turkey. It was conducted in conjunction with the Paris and Tokyo Memoranda, utilizing their joint guidelines and questionnaires. The campaign shows the following preliminary results. Over the course of the CIC period, a total of 775 inspections were carried out. Of these inspections, 624 inspections were performed using the CIC questionnaire, and the ship was subjected to only one CIC inspection during the campaign period. According to data from the Black Sea Information System, 76 ships were detained in total, of which 52 detentions were the result of inspections with CIC questionnaires, and 16 of them were detained as a direct result of the CIC concerning deficiencies related to ballast water management, resulting in a CIC topic-related detention rate of 2.56%. The initial analysis indicates that non-conformities identified during the CIC were largely focused on a limited number of areas, with approximately 89.3% of all recorded non-compliances relating to three specific questionnaire items, including the operational condition of ballast water management systems, the proper completion of the ballast water record book, and crew familiarization with the ballast water management plan. Among these, BWMS operability emerged as the most significant area of concern, accounting for the highest number of non-conformities and the largest share of CIC-related detentions. According to type of ship, the highest number of CIC were conducted on bulk carriers with 214 inspections, followed by general cargo, multi-purpose ships with 213 inspections, then oil, chemical tankers with 74 inspections and oil tankers with 68 inspections, which comprised 5, 6, 9 total CIC inspections with a rate of 91.2%. The initial findings further indicate that vessels aged between 15 and 25 years accounted for the majority of CIC-related detentions. You can find the report at bsmou.org. Up next, Mitsui O.S.K. Lines announced Japan's first ship-to-ship bunkering of methanol vessel fuel at anchorage. The company teamed up with the city of Yokohama, Kokuka Sanyo Company, Idemitsu Kosen Company, and Mitsubishi Gas Chemical Company, collectively known as the Five Parties, to successfully complete the endeavor. Methanol fuel was transferred from the Eika Maru to the Kozan Maru 7 in the Yokohama district of Keihan Port. The Eika Maru is a coastal methanol transport vessel operated by Kokuka Sanyo, and the Kozan Maru 7 is a dual-fuel, ocean-going, methanol transport vessel operated by MOL, and both are chartered by MGC. This operation also used domestically produced biomethanol from MGC's Niigata plant, which is scheduled to be used as fuel for the future operation of the Kozan Maru 7. For our next report, Britannia P&I Club has collaborated with CWA Singapore, Food and Agricultural Commodities Department, to provide loss prevention guidance on transporting bulk soybean cargo within the maritime sector. In recent decades, the demand for both soybean oil and soybean meal has grown rapidly. The largest producers and exporters of soybeans are Brazil, the United States, and Argentina. The route between Brazil and China is associated with a high volume of cargo claims. This reflects both the scale of the trade and the challenges presented by the voyage. The journey from Brazil to China is notably longer, often exceeding 30 to 40 days. The cargo is also exposed to a wide variation in temperature as vessels transit through equatorial and tropical climates. While vessels from the United States also pass through such regions, the longer voyage duration from Brazil increases the time the cargo spends in transit. It is during this time which any instability may result in cargo deterioration. While the high number of claims is in part due to the large quantity of beans carried on this route and the extended voyage time, the inherent biological characteristics of soybeans have also contributed to a rise in claims. The differences between the national quality standards further contribute to this rise. Brazilian soybeans are assessed and certified at loading according to Brazilian soybean standards. These differ in several key parameters from the Chinese standards. There are variations in the permitted moisture limit and the classification of heat-damaged beans. Effective loss prevention for soybean cargoes relies on a combination of preparation, monitoring, and consistent documentation throughout the stages of the voyage. Britannia P&I Club has also included guidance on preventative measures for each stage of a voyage that reflect industry best practices and draw on the lessons from recent claims, particularly on the Brazil to China trade route. You can read more via the news section in our website. In our next segment, West P&I Club insight on soot pollution from inert gas systems and open-loop scrubbers. The maritime industry is confronting an increasingly serious environmental challenge, soot pollution arising from inert gas systems and open-loop exhaust gas scrubber operations. What were once considered isolated or incidental events have now evolved into a systemic issue, exposing shipowners and operators worldwide to potential significant operational disruption, financial loss, and regulatory scrutiny, says West of England P&I Club. To date, the club has recorded over 60 documented incidents, although the true scale of the problem is believed to be substantially greater. Growing environmental awareness has led many ports and coastal states to prohibit open-loop scrubber operations entirely. Elsewhere, inspections have become more intrusive and penalties more severe. Jurisdictions such as Turkey and the UAE are notable for their strict and highly visible enforcement approaches. Depending on the jurisdiction, the fines can be in the range of a few thousand dollars to millions of dollars. The club has experience where vessels have been subject to fines exceeding $1 million for serious pollution incidents. The absence of uniform international standards, particularly for inert gas systems discharges, further complicates compliance and exposes ship operators to regulatory uncertainty, financial risk, and reputational damage. Preventive measures and best practices. Most soot pollution incidents are entirely preventable through disciplined operations, effective training, and proactive maintenance. Shipowners and operators are strongly encouraged to adopt the following best practices, including strict adherence to manufacturer's guidance, comprehensive pre-operation inspections, crew training and competency development, adoption of cleaner technologies, robust record keeping, enhanced preventive maintenance regimes, and real-time monitoring and early detection. The club also shared details on understanding the sources, inert gas systems and scrubber systems, as well as information on regulatory standards and gaps. You can find out more by visiting. You can read the full report at westpni.com. Next, the Marine Safety Investigation Unit of Transport Malta has published a report into the death of a bulker cargo surveyor after they were trapped during the hatch cover closing process. On the 24th of January 2025, Ocean Sentry was preparing to load steel Harpo Products General at Wharf, Gwangyang, South Korea. The vessel had arrived during the previous evening. Cargo holds were cleaned, and residual cargo collected in drums. On the morning of the accident, the deck crew opened the hatch covers and removed the stored drums. Meanwhile, the bunker cargo surveyor left the ship's office after meeting with the chief engineer, the master, and the P&I representative. Shortly after, one of the crew members proceeded to the cargo hold number 2 hatch cover control station to close the hatch cover. At approximately 0840, the electrotechnical officer discovered the surveyor fatally trapped between the aft part of cargo hold hatch cover number 2 and the hatch combing. The safety investigation determined that in all probability, the cause of the accident was the surveyor's becoming trapped during the hatch cover closing process. The MSIU has taken into consideration the safety actions taken by the company and no recommendations have been made. The autopsy report confirmed that the bunker cargo surveyor suffered from severe head injuries as a result of being trapped between the closing cargo hold number 2 folding hatch cover and the cargo hold hatch combing. In view of the absence of witnesses, the safety investigation could not determine why the bunker cargo surveyor had positioned himself in the area. You can find the full report at msiu.gov.mt. A quick update for our next segment, the International Chamber of Shipping has announced the joining of Indian National Shipowners Association as a full member. INSA represents the interests of Indian shipping companies and plays a central role in advancing India's maritime sector, including fleet development, maritime education, and engagement with national and international regulatory bodies. Up next, AET has signed an agreement with Dalian Shipbuilding Industry Corp for its first hybrid electric dynamic positioning shuttle tanker. The latest new build has been designed to be dual fuel, lower emissions ready and secured on long-term charter. The agreement was inked with Dalian Shipbuilding Industry Corporation for the construction of a 154,000 deadweight ton Suezmax DPST equipped with an electric energy storage system and designed to be dual fuel ethanol ready, with projected delivery in 2028. In our next report, as the global shift toward electric mobility transforms our cargo into high-energy puzzles, the car carriers of the maritime world face a complex new chemistry of risk. The Vehicle Carrier Safety Forum guidelines provide the essential scaffolding for vessel operators to build their own defenses, recognizing that while we cannot standardize every ship, we must standardize our readiness for the modern blaze. The Vehicle Carrier Safety Forum recognizes that responding to vehicle fires on board PCCs, PCTCs, RoRo and RoPax vessels is both dangerous and challenging. These guidelines have been designed to reduce the risk to the safety of crews, passengers, the environment, and the vessel. Their sole aim is to assist vessel operators and crews to be better prepared to meet the challenges presented by vehicle fires. The Vehicle Carrier Safety Forum guidelines do not provide detailed procedures to vessel operators on how to respond to fires on their vessels. There are too many variables in design, equipment, and trade for that to be realistic. Instead, they provide a framework for vessel operators to use to inform their own more detailed procedures. The guidelines recognize that response is limited by vessel design, current crew training regimes, and equipment available on board. They do not include use of emerging technical solutions. The scope of the guidelines includes fire response for internal combustion engine vehicles and vehicles fully or partly powered by lithium-ion batteries. You can download the guidelines at iaams.org. For our next story, the Liberia Maritime Authority has sent out a marine advisory to reinforce the mandatory compliance requirements that govern engine room fire prevention, fire protection readiness, and safe machinery space operations on Liberian flagged vessels. The authority added recent engine room fire incidents indicated that non-compliance with established regulations, marine notices, and safety requirements remained a significant causal factor. Key safety failures identified in four outlined cases included the following: fuel, oil spray contacting uninsulated or inadequately shielded hot surfaces, missing, damaged, oil-soaked, or deteriorated thermal insulation, incomplete closing of engine room ventilation flaps and dampers, crew unfamiliarity with CO2 activation sequence, remote cabinet use, and pilot cylinder initiation. Water mist systems are not fully functional on emergency power. Improper torque, workmanship deficiencies, or vibration leading to component failure. Emergency response without full PPE and BA sets. And inadequate maintenance records or incomplete testing logs. The notice also included information on flag administration requirements and best practices alongside details of mandatory actions to ensure conformity with Liberian and IMO standards. Read the full notice at www.liscr.com/online-library. In our next report, the European Maritime Safety Agency has published a new report focused on the safety of ammonia as a marine fuel. The report was developed by an ABS-led consortium that included the National Technical University of Athens and the Fundación Valencia Port. This final report consolidates the study's findings and recommendations for future regulatory developments. It highlights the importance of using risk and reliability methods for the identification of top risk contributors and lists best practice recommendations in line with current industry standards. The report also highlights considerations related to the long-term toxicity risks from chronic low-level ammonia exposure, the lack of performance standards for ammonia safety systems, the lack of harmonized guidance for gas dispersion simulations, and the lack of technical and performance criteria for the design, integration, and maintenance of the ammonia release mitigation system, amongst others. Based on the insights gained from the study, the report includes recommendations that expand upon existing interim guidelines from the International Maritime Organization for the Safety of Ships Using Ammonia as Fuel. By way of a survey and online workshop, industry stakeholders sent in feedback that emphasized the necessity of a comprehensive understanding of ammonia's properties to effectively mitigate the safety risks associated with its use as a marine fuel. You can find the report via iaams.org/news. Up next, IACKS, the International Association of Classification Societies, has released a new unified requirement, URH2, establishing a comprehensive safety framework for ammonia release mitigation systems, ARMS, on ammonia-fueled ships. The UR provides harmonized requirements for the design, testing, and certification of ARMS intended to manage ammonia releases during normal operations and foreseeable abnormal scenarios. Key takeaways from the new URH2 include the following. Enabling the safe uptake of ammonia as a marine fuel. It aligns with MSC1/Circular 1687 and provides clarity on how ammonia release mitigation systems should be implemented, assessed, and approved by classification societies. Facilitating the application of ARMS. Achieved through setting out a clear framework for evaluating ammonia release scenarios and corresponding mitigation measures. This approach supports the development of tailored technical solutions while maintaining a consistent safety objective. Recognizing multiple technical solutions while ensuring consistent safety outcomes. It covers a range of mitigation concepts, including dissolution tanks, scrubbers, combustion units, and dilution systems, without constraining innovation, provided that defined safety objectives and exposure limits are met. Establishing clear expectations for testing, certification, and onboard readiness. The UR defines workshop and onboard testing regimes, certification requirements, and operational readiness criteria to ensure that ARMS remain effective in mitigating the hazards connected with operational ammonia fuel releases. Next, Britannia P&I has released updated guidance notes on the IG Ship Condition Survey Report forms. Now available for both surveyors and masters, the revised documents have been developed to provide clearer direction on completing the International Group Ship Condition Survey Report forms, supporting more consistent reporting standards across the fleet. Condition surveys play a vital role in maintaining ship safety, identifying potential risks, and ensuring compliance with international group requirements. The updated guidance does the following. Clarifies key reporting expectations, helping surveyors and masters understand what information is required and why. Improves the consistency and quality of submissions, allowing for more accurate assessments and more efficient processing. Supports safer ship operations, by highlighting areas that commonly lead to claims or operational issues. And enhances communication between masters, surveyors, and clubs, reducing ambiguity and improving the overall survey experience. You can download the updates via BritanniaP&I.com. For our next update, the World Shipping Council Dual Fuel Fleet Dashboard shows the number of dual fuel container ships and vehicle carriers on the water has reached 400 as of December 2025, up from 218 in 2024. The dashboard tracks the global liner shipping industry's investment in new ships capable of running on renewable and lower emission fuels, and shows how the fleet is preparing for the energy transition. The number of dual-fuel ships on order has also continued to grow, reaching 726 vessels, despite a flurry of deliveries shifting from the order book onto the water. Across the container ship and vehicle carrier order book, 74% of vessels on order are dual-fuel. In total, 1,126 dual-fuel container ships and vehicle carriers are now delivered or on order, an increase of 28% compared with last year. This represents over $150 billion of investment by the liner shipping industry in these new vessels. The expansion of the dual-fuel fleet reflects the scale of investment underway across the liner shipping industry. These vessels are built for the fuel transition, with the capability to switch to renewable and near-zero fuels as they become commercially viable and available at scale. You can find out more at www.worldshipping.org. In our next story, Class NK has launched a joint pilot test with 10 Japanese companies for its drawing approval system NK Pass and the Class NK 3D Viewer. Both are compatible with 3D model-based approval, scheduled for official release later this spring. 3D MBA is an approach in which approval processes are centered on 3D models instead of conventional 2D drawings, and its adoption is expanding globally. By using 3D models, it is expected to enhance visualization and accuracy for information that was difficult to identify in traditional processes, as well as enable faster detection of design changes and potential errors. The pilot test will focus on verification of 3D MBA compatible functionalities, verification of data interoperability using the OCX format, and verification of practical operations combining 3D models with supplementary 2D drawings as needed during the transition phase. The new systems are being developed to support the transition from the conventional 2D drawing-based approval process to a new workflow centered on 3D models. They are designed to accommodate the internationally standardized open-class 3D exchange format, contributing to digital transformation across the shipbuilding industry. Through this pilot testing, Class NK aims to identify operational challenges and advantages of 3D MBA and refine the system in preparation for its official release in spring 2026. And for our final story, the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch has appointed Rob Loader as its new chief inspector. Rob replaces Andrew Moll OBE, who retired last month after 21 years' service at the MAIB. Rob brings a wealth of experience to the role, having worked as an engineer officer on board oil tankers, cable ships, ferries and superyachts before moving into fleet management, ship repair and project management. After training in heavy engineering ashore, Rob joined the Merchant Navy and served as an able seaman and motorman while completing a rating to officer conversion course. Upon qualifying, Rob was promoted to engineer officer and served on a variety of vessels including oil tankers, cable ships, ferries and superyachts, and attained the rank of chief engineer. Rob moved into fleet management and then into ship repair, ship build supervision and project management. After a period of consultancy to the marine industry, Rob joined the MAIB in 2020 as an inspector, progressing to principal inspector and then deputy chief inspector before taking up his current role. Rob is a chartered engineer, marine engineer, and a fellow of the Institute of Marine Engineering, Science and Technology. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.